today's talk is going to be by Professor Ferdinando Villa and Dr. Stefano Balbi here. And they're going to talk about integrated modeling and artificial intelligence and to understand socioeconomic systems. And Ferdinando will talk about ERIS, which is the artificial intelligence side of it, and the integrated model. And then Stefano will give us some examples of the applications. So the examples in this talk will be on migration, the Sustainable Development Goals, and the third part is the reason they're here. They're working with us and notonemore.org, just to advertise your website, on environmental defenders, and how that can be, how ERIS can be used to identify threats to environmental defenders. So I'll just let Fernando start, and if you want to ask questions, if you can just wait till the end, would be great. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, and it's really nice to be here in this wonderful university. I'm always embarrassed when I start a talk because I don't know who I am in front of me, and this stuff can be taken from so many different angles. So what I usually do, and definitely what I will do today, is to take it from all possible angles and make it extremely confusing at the beginning. Then I try to monitor faces and see if I need to make any shift in trajectory. What my group has been working on for a long time, and me myself is like 20 years, but with a team that we have assembled, starting when I was in the US, I think at this point is more than 10 years, has been to find a strategy so that we can overcome the impasse intrinsic to the activity of modeling natural and social systems, which are extremely complex, and building extremely complex models means that these models do not get used and they don't get understood. And at the same time, building too simplified models of things like ecosystem services, interactions between humans and nature, etc., doesn't give us the predictive power and expressive power to analyze the scenarios that we have in need to figure out. So me and my group in the last few years have found tried to find an alternative to this conundrum by shifting the complexity of model building and model integration as much as possible within technology, and using artificial intelligence to integrate knowledge components, smaller knowledge components built by people as a response to a user query. And that's how all this story comes together. So the idea of the semantic web, I don't know how many of you are familiar with this. I am kind of a strange hybrid between an ecologist, a computer scientist, at this point, many other things. All these words mean something to someone, but usually all of them together don't mean anything to anyone. So it's kind of complicated to choose the proper, again, semantics. But the main point is that when we deal with a problem, most of us are expert in something. We're expert in ideology, we're expert in biodiversity, we are expert in social systems, etc. But model building, and particularly predictive model building, has been an activity that hasn't been yielding the ability of building a model that is just about one particular thing and integrating that model with something built independently by others. It's been so far extremely difficult to build the models that are not monoliths and are not necessarily ending into the pigeonhole of representing something properly and then building an enormous context for other information that is really not something we know much about. So this set of ideas is trying to create instruments so that data and models that are independently gathered and built by different people can be tagged with the knowledge that they represent, and this knowledge can be made as possible, as communal and shared as possible, so that the integration becomes not only possible but also natural. So my group has been working for a long time into is the ability of building an environment that it looks a bit like Wikipedia, meaning that everybody can contribute, but instead of contributing text and just promoting this peer review cycle that ultimately make this text converge towards a meaningful entity, starts with a large base of knowledge which represents the concepts that a certain group of scientists is working with, and uses this concept to tag the knowledge that can be at that point distributed and put on the network, and automatically discovered and integrated by machines. So this paradigm called, I'm not familiar with this thing. Okay, this paradigm called FAIR, which is something that data scientists talk about a lot these days. FAIR, standing for findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable, is basically the new mantra for particularly the data scientists, which will eventually allow us to, embarrassed by not being able to use this. I'd love to be able to point. I'll probably use my hands. No, that doesn't point to anything. So eventually, enable us to, first of all, reuse all the abundant data that are around. At this point, so many data have been made and built, remote sensing, sensor networks, increasingly available strategies, volunteer information, all these sort of things. But nobody can literally take those data and understand exactly what they mean. There is no systematic strategy to attach meaning to data. So what happens is fragmentation, and what happens in particular is that if we need users like decision makers, etc., who need the information quickly and safely, making sure that what the information is actually representing what is needed, there is no simple way to make sure that we can easily go and collect that information. So where are we in terms of using and reusing data? We try to use the concept of semantics, which is something that is obviously originating in philosophy, but the computer scientists have been working a lot recently on, to provide a formal framework so that meaning can be formalized in a way that is understandable to humans, but at the same time representable in computers. So what we have been working on a lot in the last 10 years or so has been the building of what we call ontologies, which is basically a set of computer documents that contain conceptualizations. And that conceptualization, which is divided in concepts and relationships between concepts, basically gives you the logical blueprint for the information to make sense. Now, this picture here that I like a lot gives you the idea of the complexity of that issue. So this picture is about rice. A lot of agriculturalists work on semantics because it's one of the most important fields where you want to make sense of information. And just the word rice means so many different things. So there's basically every single box in there is the meaning of the word rice for a different kind of person. Nutritionist, chef, consumer, they all look at different things. And for each person, there is a different interpretation that slightly differs from the other. So in order for taking a data set about rice and expressing it in a way, it's not just a matter of saying what is in there, because that same word will mean different things to different people. So we have done a fairly decent job in data science. So we have now strategies to make data open, linked in a more or less reliable way. Although the problem of the difficulty of ensuring that semantic is the same semantics for everyone remains. We have done a much worse job in using models, in doing the same with models. We still use modeling paradigms that are completely incompatible with each other. So if we have a stochastic model on one side, and a process-based model on the other, and then we want to connect with an agent-based model on a particular social system or something like that. Or you can have negotiate representation like spatial, non-spatial, raster, and vector, etc. It's almost impossible to make models talk to models and to make data talk to models in a reliable way so that this process can be automated. So it remains very difficult to mix and match models that incarnate paradigms that are different between one another. So the main problem that happens, as usual, is that we have one main model component, that is the one that we really work on, and then we trick the rest of the model to handle the rest of the context, so forth. This is not an ideal situation for integration. And all the models we work with, most of the models we work with are basically monoliths, just large pieces of information that cannot be broken apart into different parts. So we have the hydrological models, we discover a particular evapotranspiration algorithm. We cannot easily take one and put it into the other and substitute the existing one. As a result of that, handling complex systems is very difficult. And there are some integrating architectures, there are some strategies to deal with this, but they are not particularly efficient because they only handle the engineering aspects, but they don't handle the actual semantic components of the problem. So if we go back to the reason why we are here, so the fact that we have to deal with socio-ecological systems, what happens, the sad state of the art in things like, for example, ecosystem service analysis, which are very important instruments in the hands of decision makers, understanding what nature provides to humans and how to deal with the complexities of that interaction, we end up discovering that because the systems are so complex and because we don't have a strategy to flexibly mix and match models of all the different components that are part of this complex system, we end up having to use models that are simply oversimplistic, like proxy models. So everybody who talks about ecosystem service models, 99% of the cases where you use those kind of models, people just deal with static maps of values or things distributed over the landscape, which is a very sorry way to address the enormous complexity of how humans and nature interact. So we end up having a simple static map that basically summarizes what humans do in a place and how land use change can affect environmental values. But the point is, if we wanted to actually inject the complexity that allows a model to actually react properly to complicated, complex phenomena like the ones that we will talk about later, migration and things like that, the models are easily become too complex to handle and too costly for any one researcher to even imagine. So the ideal situation would be the opposite of what we have now. This is the state of the art. We build this map with a very simple way, in a very simple way, and then we kind of use the map to infer the behavior of what is a very complex system. And the ideal situation would be to do the opposite, would be to be able to build a system, and if decision makers need a map, then the map would be built from the understanding of the dynamic complexity of a social environmental system. And that what that would add to the information would be the dimension of time, obviously, which is the most important. I mean, time scaling and all the complexities of how systems evolve in time are really the reason why we build models. And we have basically given up on this particular kind of issues because of the excessive complexity of these interactions. So what we have done, and what Kashera was mentioning before, the area system, which is our flagship product in ecosystem service analysis, has been to build this generic framework where we represent social natural system as a set of agents, and we categorize, we classify those agencies to three main categories, which is providers, which is the natural components that provide services, benefits, goods to humans. Then we identify beneficiaries, which are basically the social agents, and according to the scale of the study, in our case, automatically, through artificial intelligence, we decide how to categorize and aggregate more or less this different agent into larger or smaller. So if you look at a large entire country, the beneficiaries may be clusters of social demand or cities or things like that. And if you look at something much smaller, it could be individual households, for example, etc. And then you have something in between, which also has its own particular dynamic, which is what we call transactors, which is basically the point of the agents where the transaction, the transfer of value happens. So if you look at this image from the side of the provision, so potential value that happens by nature going to the transaction point, this is the part of the model that some kind of decision makers are concerned about. This other part is actually what happens at the social side. But if you look at the two together, and you have a system that enables you to represent nature this way, nature and societies this way, then you get a fully dynamic account of natural value. The problem with this is that it's too complex for a human to build in each single case study, in each single situation. But it is what we need in order to make sense of the systems. So our own contribution to this has been to try and use this model so that we can teach an artificially intelligent algorithm driven by the semantics of the system to build these things automatically in each situation. So the way that would work on a particular situation would be that a user could send a particular query to a machine, select a context of like a country, for example, and then find the concept from our knowledge base that represents what they need. Like it could be social dynamics of water in a watershed. And based on that question, and that question only, so just one single query, without any indication of how the model should be built, the machine would first understand that a provider needs to be built, and at that particular scale, a provider of that question could be a watershed, for example, and that would trigger an automatic watershed delineation model from some part of the network that is connected to the system. Then beneficiaries would be identified, and at that scale, it could be villages, for example, and farmers. Then, because those two don't interact directly, the machine would look for the transaction points, so villages may be using wells in order to address to assess the water, because water is just distributed over the landscape, but villages don't take it from the landscape, they take it from point of collection, for example. And obviously the relationship between farmers and water would be mediated by crops. Crops would be connected easily, if in case of irrigation, etc., to the watershed, and this would be a fairly easy connection to make. Then the artificial intelligence could analyze the relationship between farmers and crops and realize that in order for those for that relationship to be expressed, you have to go to an intermediate transaction, which is a market, because the direct value of the crop is for food, which could be this arrow, but the indirect value and the actual value for farmers would be the economic value that goes through that. So instead of having one expert having to figure out all this in each situation, what we try to build is a machine that can just go over the knowledge base that we build with scientists for a long time and we share with all users, and automatically build this kind of system just by looking at a place, going through the data available, and automatically constructing the agents and connecting them. So from a point of view of the actual technical perspective, you have a user sitting there that has those two operations, set a context, find a concept and observe it, and that would trigger query. The query would go to the first server. The first server would say that, okay, I need a watershed. I don't know how to create a watershed, so let's see if anything else on the network can do it. So another node is actually specialized in that, so it would respond to that and start building this model here. So building the first hydrological model. In order to do that, they need the transactors and beneficiaries. Those would be start populating the network, build a flow network, etc. You will need weather stations, computer hydrological model, etc., etc. And in the end, our users will get results, and our users would necessarily not know about all this. It's exactly the same stuff when you send an email. We have used to the fact that we just click send and people get the email, but we have no idea what happens in between. It's an enormous amount of stuff that happens in between. All kind of servers get connected to each other. Your email goes to Australia and then comes back and you have no idea. It's very similar here. A user wants this, and if the user is the kind of user that doesn't want to understand the results, you were just looking at their screen and they will just see the results being computed. If the user is a more technical user, then they can investigate what happens in there and actually influence and affect what happens in there. That's the kind of paradigm we are trying to enable and basically move beyond the currently relatively primitive state of the art in science, where science is, yes, doing great progress in terms of enabling discovery, but not really putting that progress in the hands of who needs the science at this very moment. So this kind of dynamics is basically the vision of putting science back in the hands of its users. And we do that in many ways, many ways are complicated. We can actually demonstrate something if you want, but we don't have time, but I know that the people will stay here for a little longer. So we are setting up, if anybody wants to see the system working, we can also provide a little demonstration after. I'm not going to tell you too much because technical details are big and complicated, but the most important part is the semantic model. So the semantics is basically the ability to categorize all the knowledge that drives this system according to a fairly simple table. Basically, this table contains examples of all the categories of knowledge we use, and we worry about the semantics. The semantics is basically building the conceptual backbone so that people, instead of using models, they will be using concepts. You need to observe something, you need carbon sequestration will be a concept, it will be a process that implies some qualities like carbon concentration that will be driven or changed by events like snowfall, birth, death of trees, etc. There will be relationships between physical objects like mountain populations, humans, rivers, etc. It's not very complicated, it's a very new way to think, but by instrumenting decision makers and scientists, and also giving them the ability and the opportunity to really think about what is the meaning of what they are doing, the person who is an expert on snow will just concentrate on this. The person who is an expert on migration will provide a little model of migration. The economist will provide a market model. There will be many models for the same concept. The machine has a way to rank those models and choose the one that is most appropriate to the concept. At the end of the whole thing, each expert only worries about what they know about, and the artificial intelligence algorithm will basically build the entire model and calibrate it and provide the results to the user, whoever the user is. So I'm not going through this, but just there is a set of software components for this, which has been the largest investment of our time, definitely of mine and also other people at the moment. There is a language like this, which you can read. It looks very much like English, but it's actually a formal language, which is the way we actually express the knowledge, and we are teaching this language to several people. And there is a number of tools and interfaces that allow to see and to use the system from the different perspectives. For example, this interface is the one that we use for modelers. You can see some examples of that later if you want. So it's complex because you actually build the models and test the models with this one, but it's actually fairly simple to use. You just choose the place you want to go on. This is Google Maps, and very simple. You look for concepts over here. You drag and drop concepts on the map. The machine gets to work. It knows who you are, so if there are private data or things like that, it just chooses the path that goes through the data that you are allowed to see. And then in the end, you get the results. It's basically this observation tree gets built, and then you can click on things and see what the results are. From a user's perspective, from a less technical user's perspective, we are building interfaces, of which this is just an example prototype. We are building interfaces that are meant to be used on the web. So you go to our website, and according to which user you are and what your preferences and your needs are, you find a palette of tools on the left that basically contains all the concepts that you're likely to need. If you're looking at ecosystem services, you will find something like this. But the system is completely agnostic about the particular application, so you can build very easily palettes that represent users of any kind. And you can make it in any language, or you can just contextualize it to whatever bottom line you are concerned about. And by this, from this to this, you just move your map, take this, drop it there. If you don't have some data, you can click return, click control, drop it here, and that will build an object that you know is there, but it's not on the map already, etc. So this kind of interface basically puts models in the hands of people, and after this is done, you take the concept here, you drop it there, the machine goes to work, and in the end you find your result, and you don't have to know anything about semantics, anything about modeling, anything about anything. It just needed to be trained enough that you can understand what the results are. The machine actually, there's a button here. When you click this button, the machine writes the paper about the data, so it's a a complete section with the maps and with all the inputs, the outputs, and a description of all the models.
It's
and
not a joke, we can prove it.
It's true. It's actually a dangerous thing to do, but it also gives you images, even the references at the end. We have some models that it doesn't even cite our own papers. So that's basically what I wanted to say, just the tooling part. I mean, this doesn't work on one machine, basically. Your machine has the client software, as we call it, basically the browser for the semantic web. And the network contains a carefully selected set of servers where any partner of our partnership can add the data models, model components, etc. Those are very carefully controlled because obviously the effect of some bad citizen model in there can be dramatic, so we know exactly which person and which group, and we give a certificate to add to this network only to people we trust. But in the end, all it is just a complicated subset of the World Wide Web, and you can use it in many ways. You can use it as a user by just connecting with your browser to one of these modeling engines that then uses all the knowledge from the network. Or you can be yourself a developer, so you can have your own modeling engine on your machine and then use the network for that. And when you have done, when you have built something that you think significant, you can publish it to the network and it becomes available to solve problems. So the most important part of this is that each new piece of knowledge is not one model that to be used as it is, but it's just one piece of something that can be used in the context of any other computation. So if I add something about carbon sequestration and I want to know about large sustainability problems, that my piece can be used as part of something else, and I may not even know what is going to be used on. But the system also keeps track of who uses what and what are the contributions of each person, so you can attach any kind of prize or social ranking to this kind of thing, so you can actually be able to rank the model according to how much people have been used them and how happy they are with their results, etc. We try to build something that is closer to the way that people use the network these days, but actually just reapply those results to building scientific information that is useful for the world. So I think I'm done with my own part, and if Stefano wants to take over, I'll give you some examples.
So you saw the technological side of the story, and now I'm going to talk a little bit, 10 minutes, not much more. So I found this book on your in your tea room this morning while we were celebrating the director's birthday, right? And and it's exactly what I was planning to say in this presentation, so it's kind of interesting what happens. So it's kind of a long-standing quest because this book is from 1998, and so it's 20 years later. We are still trying to do this, so putting people on the map, basically. And I don't know how many of you are working on ecosystem services, and if you are familiar with this type of research, you're probably familiar with the fact that the natural side of ecosystem services is very well researched and described and so on. But the social side of the story is kind of left to its own fate, because basically most of the models, they assume that population density is enough to represent people on the map. But the fact is that population density is not enough, because people is very different, and there are so many types of social agents that you can or want to model. For example, from the national scale, you might be interested in modeling cities, but if you go on a finer scale, you are interested in villages or households, and they have different identities. So it's really important that we understand also that when we want to model ecosystem services, we need to focus on the social side and be flexible enough to understand what is the key information to focus on. It really depends on your question, right? But For example, if you are interested in the value of ecosystem services, then you might want to understand who are the users of these services. And according to our who are the users, different values can be applied, different perspectives. For example, we use a lot of multi-criteria analysis to represent different values from different stakeholders' categories. I guess what I wanted to say is that we have a bunch of data right now that's available, and there are very different sources, and we are not able to use them all together. So most of the people, social scientists, are using national census, household surveys, this is participatory rural appraisal type of data, but for example, remote sensing provided by satellites and drones are giving us other type of information. Crowdsourced information like OpenStreetMap map. I don't know if you ever saw that. So that's basically people saying, I know about this particular feature and I put it online, and so everybody else is now is knows that this feature is there and I can use it. I can use this information. And then obviously this is the, let's say, the hot topic, big data is not only social networks but also mobile phones and stuff. So in order to resolve huge problems like sustainable development goals or well, actually, I'm going to talk about migration a little bit and sustainable development goals and this proposal that we are working with them. So how do you use all this data all together? How do you put this all together? You have seen the technological side of the story. Basically, we have enabled this cyber infrastructure to put data and models together. And that is the first part. So basically, the semantics is the glue, is the labeling and matching system that allows different type of data to talk to each other and also models. And now, once you have done that, you can exploit this information that you have in the system. You can mine this data, and for example, learn models. We talk about machine learning when. Basically, it's data-driven models. And one example that I want to give you here is this one. So I don't know if you are familiar with the idea of green and red loops in ecosystem services. It's a bit of a jargon in ecosystem services area, but the basic idea is how much people is consuming natural resources locally or if they are importing stuff from. So it's typically the rural and urban divide. Urban people, they consume natural resources coming from outside. Rural people, maybe, most of the times, especially in developing countries, they are consuming natural resources that are local. Can we understand from social characteristics their dependency on local natural resources? This is, for example, a model that we applied in the surrounding of Durban in South Africa, to demonstrate that by looking at these social characteristics, we can say how much people is dependent on natural resources. And this model is actually quite good because it's 92% accurate, let's say. It's able to categorize correctly a certain district in 92% of the population. So this is just an example of how we can use social data. In this case, it's census data from South Africa, 2011. But South Africa is a special case in Africa. They are making this national census every 10 years. Most of the other countries in Africa are not doing that. So if you want to, for example, replicate something like this, you need other sources of information. And a model like this is telling you, for example, that with only these two variables, you are already able to explain 80% of the situations. And these two variables, one is population density, and the other one is the percentage of households that are living in informal settlements, slums, basically. And this type of information, you can sense it with satellite or with drones. So the idea is that we can move from using national census data as the primary source of information to start from somewhere else and then use national census data to validate what we are doing. And this gives us a lot of possibilities for the future. Another type of huge problem that needs to be investigated more and requires every kind of data, multidimensional data, is the case of human migration. So supposing that you want to model where the people is moving in the future due to environmental change, you need a bunch of data on everything, basically, on economic situation, on climate, on weather, on potential risks, you name it. So basically this is a part of a proposal that I was writing for the ERC. Didn't get funded, but I will work further on it and hopefully in the next future I will get it. In this case, I want to focus on the idea of migratory profile. So digging the data to the point that you are able to extract, for example, a migrant behavioral type that has a certain point of origin, a certain behavior, and a certain possible destination. And then you can put this on the map and see where people that are categorized like that particular type are moving around. Seems quite ambitious, probably, but it's quite feasible with the technology we have now. And also, for example, migrants could add data through mobile applications. For example, they could say, okay, I'm here, I want to move there. And this is kind of like what we'd like to do with this environmental threat sensor. So, for example, enabling an interface that allows people to access this data. This is about environmental defenders. And I have my two colleagues here that could explain this much better than me. But the idea is that we can exploit the data to understand, to predict where are the regions in the world that are most at risk for of attacks to environmental defenders. And for example, well, this is the plan more or less of our research, of our project. We would like to interview environmental defenders to understand from them which they think are the main variables, driving variables of violence against them. Then building a database of key variables. As you see, this database is also quite complex, needs to be harmonized, so this is where semantics plays a very important role. Then you can mine this data to understand how the variables are driving the risk. And from this, basically, you can train a predictive model that can also be a spatial model. So you apply this model spatially, and then you build them up. And you can put it online, and you can ask people to supply more data or just use it to, you know, disseminate the problem, understand what's going on around the world. So basically an instrument to catalyze attention and also enable further data contribution. I jumped here and there, but I mean, probably most of you are familiar with the idea of sustainable development goals monitoring. It's an incredible complex problem. Most of the goals are conflicting among each other. So you need to have, in order to do this properly, you need to have a system in place where everything is connected. Water is connected to agriculture, is connected to social well-being. And it's not that you can use another logical model to test this target or this target and then forget about the rest, because one change in one piece of the system will affect the rest. So I'm not going to spend much time here, but the idea is that you need a complex system like the one we are building in order to deal with this kind of complexity. Otherwise, you will only look at one side of the problem and never the whole picture. And I am in a, for example, in a group that is from Future Earth. They are focusing on, for example, on water targets of the Sustainable Development Goals, but they are using these models that they only look at one part of the problem. So model integration needs to become a priority in general for science. For science and for scientists that want to deal with these kind of problems, otherwise it's just, So the idea is that we have this system in place, and it's a very ambitious project, and we are trying to deal with very complex problems, but we are open, and everybody who is interested to participate is really welcome. We have this open source software, we have the infrastructure. Basically, the approach here is to make modeling as open and collaborative as possible. So that's why we talk about Wikipedia Live. We use the metaphor of Wikipedia to pass the message that science could also, in particular modeling, could also become a bit like Wikipedia. So I don't know how many of you are modelers, but most of the modelers I know, they do their model, they publish the paper, and then the model is forgotten somewhere. They never talk about it anymore. Nobody knows what was in there, and nobody can reuse it. I mean, that's not really science, because at the basis of science, it's replicability. At least that's what Galileo used to say. So this is our answer to that. And yes, if you're interested, we can show you the laptop itself, or we can just have some. Okay, thank you.